I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
This week, Haiti's government declared a state of emergency.
The situation in Haiti has been dire for years, but this assault on the prison marks a new low. Armed gangs attacked the National Penitentiary on Saturday night, allowing many prisoners to escape.
North America's poorest country has been rocked by deadly violence for years. Now it's descending further into terrifying chaos. On Sunday, armed gangs stormed two major prisons, freeing thousands of inmates. Just hours later, they attacked the nation's main airport, trying to take control. A security plan led by Kenya is in the works, but will it bring calm to the Caribbean country of more than 11 million people? And how did Haiti get to this crisis point? I'm Melissa Duggan, and this is The Big Story. Robert Fatone Jr. is the Ambassador Taylor Professor of Politics in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. Hi, Robert.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for being here. Robert, if you were to arrive in Haiti today and walk around, what would you see? What would your experience be like?
Well, today you probably would not be able to arrive because all the airports have been closed and all international flights have been canceled. But if you were to come in the past, then the situation would be very stark. You would see immediately the significant amount of poverty. You would also see the increasing level of violence and the fear in people's views, because Port-au-Prince is basically under the control of the gangs. Now, that's one aspect of the thing. The other aspect is obviously that the country is a beautiful country, beautiful mountains, beautiful beaches. It's a country of contrast. Mm-hmm. And you have the big chasm between the very well-off, who live in beautiful mansions with swimming pool, etc. And then you have the stark reality of the divide, and you have a significant number of people, I mean, the overwhelming majority of Haitians live in poverty and some in extreme poverty. So this is a country of contrast, a country that is really facing a major crisis at the moment. We are hoping for the best, although the situation is on the verge of a catastrophic collapse of all institutions.
Tell me more about the current situation at Haiti's main airport.
Well, the airport is now defended by the army. And I should emphasize that the army in Haiti was disbanded under Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 1995-1994. And the army has been reconstituted, but it's a very weak army, very poorly trained, and with basically not very good weapons. But nonetheless, the army and the police have been defending the airport from the attacks of the gangs. The gangs have declared that their intention is to overthrow the current government of Ariel Henry. And in the last few hours, the situation has deteriorated further to the point that the U.S. has apparently asked for the resignation of the current Prime Minister, Ariel Henry. The problem, though, is that no one knows who would replace him. There are all kinds of different political parties, solutions proposed by conflicting actors in the Haitian political class. So we are in a state of utter uncertainty about what is going to happen now.
Sure. And I just want to mention, too, that we're having this discussion on Wednesday morning. That's what's happening right now. I want to go back in time a little bit. Haiti's President Jovenel Moïse was killed 3 years ago. What do we know about his assassination? And did that mark a turning point?
This is a mystery because we have all kinds of conspiracies within the conspiracy to assassinate Jovenel Moïse. The Americans have arrested and convicted a few people who were participating in the coup, but there were others in Haiti. And in the last few weeks, we have seen, in fact, a Haitian judge by the name of Voltaire has actually charged something like 51 people in the assassination. And in that group, he has included the wife of Jovenel Moïse, Martine Moïse. He has included the former prime minister of Haiti, Claude Joseph. He has also included the former chief of police, who was actually the ambassador of Haiti at the Organization of American States, and he had to resign. So you have that part of the situation, and then you have clearly the involvement of the Colombians. The Colombians apparently entered the compound, the house of Jovenel Moïse without any form of resistance. And eventually, apparently, some of them killed the president, and Martine Moïse was also injured in the process. But the judge has nonetheless put her in that group of people who were complicit in the assassination. Even the current prime minister, Ariel Henry, was found to be on a phone call with someone by the name of Joseph Badiou, who some argue was actually the architect of the whole assassination. So the mystery continues. I don't know if we'll ever find out who was directly involved. Some people have been convicted. Now, the assassination marked a turning point to the extent that it left the country without a legitimate form of power. All actors in Haiti now are actually de facto, none of them have been elected. So the decision to put Ariel Henry as prime minister was actually a kind of a bizarre decision, because initially the international community, in the immediate aftermath of the assassination, had supported the then Prime Minister, Claude Joseph, but after about 10 days, they decided that Claude Joseph would no longer be the Prime Minister and that Ariel Henry should be the Prime Minister. And that was done through a tweet. So you can understand how bizarre the whole situation in Haiti was and persists. But we have now conditions of great violence in the country. Something like 8,000 people have been killed over the past year. The gangs are increasingly powerful, increasingly autonomous from the people who had initially created them. So we are literally facing a descent into hell.
What sparked this latest surge of violence? I'm thinking over the weekend with this jail break that saw thousands of inmates released.
Yes. Well, Ariel Henry went to Nairobi in Kenya because he wanted to sign an agreement with the Kenyans so that the force that was authorized by the United Nations, the force led by the Kenyan police, would come to Haiti and support the government of Ariel Henry against the violence of the gangs. And the gangs at that point reacted violently. They never liked Ariel Henry. They decided that he was someone that had to go. And they literally benefited from that window of opportunity in the sense that Ariel Henry was not in the country to attack the airport, so that would prevent him from coming back. They also released the vast majority of criminals that were in the main jails of Haiti. So the idea was to create a climate of chaos, I think, so that would prevent the prime minister from coming in. And they also resist the idea that an international force is necessary in Haiti. So the goal was, first, prevent the return of Ariel Henry. Second, obviously, that he would not only not be able to come back, but that he would be removed from his position as prime minister. And it seems that they have succeeded in compelling the United States to force the resignation of Ariel Ri, although that is not official yet.
Tell me more about plans to have Kenya involved in bringing safety and security to Haiti, a country that's an ocean away.
Yes, well, initially, people thought that the United States would intervene and send their own troops to Haiti. And the Biden administration decided that that would not be possible. And eventually, what they did was to ask different countries to join a peacekeeping mission, as it were. I even think that Canada was asked, Mexico was asked, the Brazilians were asked, and all of them turned the Americans down. So the issue was who would do it. And the United States and Kenya have very good relations, and they have security agreements. In the signing of the last security agreement between the Kenyans and the United States, I believe that the Americans asked the Kenyans to join and to help them in providing the police forces that would assist the government. The Kenyans have asked for money, obviously. Yesterday, President Ruto of Kenya declared that they are prepared to go within 72 hours, but that they need $200 million to provide the necessary financial and logistic support for the Kenyan forces. So that's where we are. It's a very bizarre agreement because Kenya and Haiti had no diplomatic relations. Kenya is obviously an English-speaking country, has no connections to Haiti. But nonetheless, that was the solution that the United States thought would be the best for calming conditions in Haiti itself.
I wonder how likely it is that Kenya will get involved now when you have these hurdles that still have to be crossed, like money, and the current Haitian leader out of the country.
It's very difficult to tell. But as of yesterday, the president of Kenya indicated that he was still prepared to go, but that he needed the money. So the problem is that Congress has declared that the Biden administration has no clear plan about Haiti, and that before they would allocate those funds, they would want to know what is the project for Haiti. And so far, the administration has been unable to clearly indicate what is the path toward a solution. They've only asked for elections. But I think, personally, that any sane individual looking at the situation in the country would not want election at this time. My personal feeling is that you need a government of transition, you need to have peace in the country, and then you can have the elections. Having elections now would essentially mean that the people with the guns, that is to say the gangs, would win those elections, which would be a catastrophe for the country.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
If this plan is rolled out, what would the reception be like in Haiti, seeing this foreign involvement?
Well, most Haitians do not want foreign involvement. On the other hand, the situation is so catastrophic that they may have to swallow their pride and accept some form of international intervention. The issue, though, is that any type of international intervention that would have been done under Ariel Ri would have been perceived as being totally illegitimate. If they had the possibility to create a government of national unity, it may be that that government would have the necessary legitimacy in order to invite foreign intervention. But we are not there yet. The gangs have said that they would fight any type of foreign troops in the country. It remains to be seen whether they have the capacity to do so. But on the other hand, they have made it clear that international troops are not welcome in the country. And most political parties have said so. But on the other hand, when you look at the situation, as I've said, it may be that the chaos and the violence is such that you would need to see the necessity of an international intervention, but under more legitimate forms of accountability in Haiti itself.
I wonder if you could describe just how much control the gangs have over the country.
Well, it is estimated that they control about 80% of Port-au-Prince. They control essentially everything downtown Port-au-Prince. They are moving up to the hills in Pétionville, but they are capable of creating significant violence anywhere in Port-au-Prince. Now, they also, in significant number, in L'Artibonite, which is a real problem for Haiti, because L'Artibonite is the breadbasket of the country, and they have started to generate significant violence in that area, which means that the country, which is already facing significant potential starvation, is finding that its breadbasket is no longer functioning. So they are everywhere in Port-au-Prince. There are about 200 gangs, and they are basically two major gangs, one which is called Fami et Allié, which is one of the so-called barbecue, Jimmy Cherizier, and the other is the Pop Fédération, which is headed by a fellow by the name of Izo. The shift that has happened, which is of significance over the weekend, is that those gangs which were fighting against each other have united in their attack against, for instance, the prisons and the airport. And it looks like that alliance may continue. And that would be a significant shift in the political landscape, because if they unite indeed, they would be a very powerful force.
I'm interested to know more about who is leading these gangs. What do they want? Why did they decide to join forces?
Well, they dislike Ariel Henry. They also want power. I mean, Jimmy Cherizier has essentially said that he would want to become president or prime minister or senator. They have money now. They have power. And they want, to some extent, to become institutionalized in the governmental structure, which is going to be very complicated. But that is their intention. Now, most of the gang members are young men living in the poor areas of Port-au-Prince. And one has to understand that the poverty that those young men confront is extreme. And this explains to some extent why joining a gang gives them some kind of meaning in their life. They have a gun, they have some power, and they can, in fact, use their weapons in order to get easy money. You kidnap, you ransom, etc., etc. The gangs are also intimately connected to the drug trafficking, and the drug trafficking is also connected to the weapons trafficking. Haiti doesn't produce any of the weapons that the gangs are using. Those get to Haiti through Miami, through Colombia, to Jamaica and the Dominican Republic. So there is a significant amount of trafficking of weapons, and they also are involved in the drug trafficking with the Colombians. So you have a network of criminalized activities that is literally overwhelming Haitian society.
North American involvement in Haiti has a long, fraught history. What role is Canada and the U.S. playing in the current crisis? What more can we do?
It's a difficult question because on the one hand, most Haitians, and I include myself in that, do not like foreign meddling. And there is meddling and meddling, as it were, you know, bringing some financial support, some solidarity to Haiti is something that I think most Haitians would be welcome. But it is when the meddling is more negative in the sense that, in particular from the United States, the U.S. has basically decided who would run the country since the coup of Aristide in 1991. Martha Lee was a choice. Whether Western audience like to hear that or believe it is irrelevant to the Haitian. Most Haitians believe that, for instance, Martha Lee was a choice of the United States, that Jovenel Moïse was the choice of the United States, and that Ariel Henry was the choice of the United States. That meddling is not obviously accepted in Haiti. It's not welcome. The other issue is the kind of foreign assistance that has been given to Haiti. It has really not helped significantly. The economy is in free fall. The international community, when it was involved with MINUSTAH, those were the peacekeepers from the United Nations from 2004 to 2017, reestablished a modicum of order and peace. But at the same time, they were heavily involved in sexual violence. They were also involved in sheer violence in the slums of Port-au-Prince, and they brought the cholera epidemic to Haiti. So this is a trail of disaster in the view of most Haitians. Now, that said, Haitians have also a significant part in the problem that Haiti has. The political class in Haiti looks at politics as a business. In other words, you take power, you use that power in order to acquire illicit gains. So that's the problem in Haiti, is there's significant corruption. So that's a syndrome that has really been part of Haiti's political history for a very, very long time.
I wonder if you still have loved ones and friends there. What are they telling you?
Essentially, my whole extended family is in Haiti, and I have obviously many friends in Haiti. Now, my extended family and I personally, we come from the elite. So we are kind of insulated in the sense that we are up in the hills and the houses are barricaded. There's private security. So it's a very different existence from that of the vast majority of Haitians, in particular the people who live downtown Port-au-Prince, because there, not only people are going hungry, but people have been displaced by the violence. It's estimated that something like 300,000 people have been forced to move from their houses, and they essentially live in the streets without any significant assistance. So you have a disaster in the making. Now, for the elite, life has changed, but they are still enjoying the benefits of their wealth, as it were. But they're also very worried about what is going to happen. They fear that it might generate a civil war and that they may become the target of that civil war. But so far, that has not happened. And even when you look at the kidnappings initially were against the wealthy. But now it's completely indiscriminate. Hmm. You may or may not have money. It's irrelevant. So everyone is suffering the conditions of the gang warfare, but people are suffering it in a very different way.
What kind of help are Haitians themselves calling for?
I think they would like to see more solidarity. And I think most Haitians would have liked to see a policy on the part of the United States in particular that would have either compelled Ariel Henry to get to the negotiation table in a very serious way or tell him that we wouldn't be the solution. And we've reached that point now. But it's we've wasted 2 years, and that means essentially that the gangs have been allowed to grow and grow and become a power unto themselves, making any solution even more complicated. Because if you have a government, even of national unity, what are you going to do with the gangs? And this is a huge question. Are you going to confront them violently, or are you going to negotiate with the gangs? And what is going to be the substance of those negotiations? This is a very complicated question because it would be very difficult for any sane individual to want gangs in a government. But if they have the power, what do you do? Now, I think eventually there will be, whether Haitians like it or not, international intervention. But it's an intervention that has to be defined, has to have clear goals. And if it's done with a more legitimate government, I think Haitians might welcome it. So it's not that Haitians do not want foreign contacts. They do, but on different terms. The other issue is how do Haitians themselves come to an agreement and decide that the situation is so critical that they have to, absolutely have to, come to an agreement and put their differences aside.
Finally, Robert, will this unrest have a destabilizing effect on neighboring Dominican Republic or the broader region?
I don't think it will have a destabilizing effect as such, but it would probably create waves of migration from Haiti. And that would be an issue for the Dominican Republic, the other Caribbean countries, and obviously the United States. And the Dominican Republic has essentially closed its frontiers to Haitians. So they're even building a wall. This is very much like the idea of Trump in the United States. We don't want more poor Haitians. Now, there are plenty of Haitians in the Dominican Republic, and there is a wave of wealthy Haitians exiting Haiti, going to the Dominican Republic. But those Haitians are essentially welcomed by the Dominican Republic. The last issue is clearly what happens if there is a complete collapse of Haiti in the next few weeks. That would be a problem, I think, for the Biden administration, in particular in an electoral year, immigration being such a big issue in the U.S. So the crisis now is not just Haiti. It's a crisis that indeed has certain consequences for not only the Caribbean, but also for the United States.
Thank you, Robert, for sharing your insight with us.
Thank you very much.
Robert Fatone Jr. is the Ambassador Taylor Professor of Politics in the Department of Politics at the University of Virginia. That was The Big Story. For more, visit thebigstorypodcast.ca. Feedback is always welcomed. We'd love to hear your suggestions for a future episode. You can always email us at hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca or call us 416-935-5935. The Big Story Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts. Like us, rate us, review us, share us with a friend. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Duggan, in for Jordan Heath Rawlings.
Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.